Now here's Scott Forster.
Yes, hello, folks. This is Scott Forster, your host. I'm speaking to you from home today. So sorry I'm not in the studio, but we are going to have a call-in today. Use this rare time in the late morning for a call-in. Your topics are welcome. Anything environmental, and I'll expand the definition of environmental to include war and President Bush. The Bush administration being one of the largest enemies of the environment, and war, of course, is devastating not only to human life, but to the planet. The number to call is 231-8187, and remember, we have a delay now, so please turn down your radios when you're on hold so we can get to talking immediately. That's 231-8187, 231-8187. Until we get another caller, we'll go ahead and I'll have a few things here. A comment on Ted Wheeler, the new chair of Multnomah County Commission. Now that he's been elected, I will say that he was out in favor of public power early. He didn't have to take a stand. He did so openly, without equivocation. I think now is the time for the 50,000 people in Multnomah County that voted in November of 2003 for the Multnomah County People's Utility District to give a call to Ted Wheeler, and you can get a hold of the switchboard if you just call 823-4000. That's the Portland Multnomah County switchboard, and ask to be transferred over to Ted Wheeler's voicemail. I think he has a transitional line. And let him know how you feel about public power, and request that he has a series of hearings throughout the county about the idea of forming a public utility, wherever it may be, whether it's Portland, the county, something smaller than that, just the general concept, so we can bring out issues such as public power is going to be cheaper for our electric rates, and that's both residential and corporations, both big and small. And of course, small businesses, there are tens of thousands of small businesses. They pay even higher rates than you and I, and they would benefit greatly from this. The public power issue is not dead, and I applaud Ted Wheeler for being open-minded, as his opponent was not. And if we can at least get a hearing and have a dialogue, this might be, again, a long-term effort, but it is an effort that is not going to go away. Public power is a great idea and will continue to be. And the new improved so-called independent Portland General Electric is not going to solve the problem. My guess is, if you heard me before, is that PGE will be owned by another corporation, either in the United States or an international corporation, within the next 2 years. And their stock is being sold on the New York Stock Exchange, and they will be, after 50% of the shares are distributed, of course, anyone can snap those up. My understanding is a outfit out of Texas has purchased more than 5% of the shares. I believe it's close to 10%. 5% is the magic number where the Oregon Public Utility Commission says that you need to get permission from them, the so-called watchdog. Actually, they're a lapdog, but they're supposed to be a watchdog. You're supposed to get permission before you buy 5%, and I guess they wrote a nasty letter saying, hey, you guys didn't ask permission. And I think they wrote back, read according to a paper report, we don't have to, and force us. We're in Texas. Basically, the PUC is once again not doing its oversight, lackluster oversight. And, you know, those folks are appointed by the governor. That's Governor Ted Kulongowski, who's running for office. Now, that's just a fact. The fact is that the governor picks the folks that serves on the Public Utility Commission. They serve at his pleasure. So if they are at his displeasure, they can be removed. So everything that they are not doing related to Enron and PGE, remember all those hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes that were collected, both state and federal taxes, I believe almost $800 million since 1997. That were never paid to the state or federal treasury. There was a law passed, and it looks like that's having some trouble. And the PUC, where are you? So, folks, we're not going to just talk about public power, but I wanted to say call Ted Wheeler at the county commission and request that he puts on the near future a series of hearings when he comes on board January 1st. I believe, sorry, I'm not sure exactly when he's sworn in, but I think it's going to be in the near future. I heard it was January 1st, but it might be sooner than that. The number to call is 231-8187. That's 231-8187. And I'll continue to ramble here until someone calls in. Take advantage of the rare opportunity to call in this late morning hour before Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, which, by the way, is good. I catch it on cable access, and it's going to be a really good show. David Helvarg, who wrote the book War with the Greens, absolutely phenomenal mind. He's like talking to a computer. He has so many factoids in his head, and he's graduated to be a champion of oceans. David Helvarg will be a guest on Amy Goodman's show beginning at 11 this morning. The PGE asked for a rate increase, by the way. So all you folks paying your bill to Portland General Electric, the new improved Portland General Electric, they've asked for about a 9% rate increase. And then Pacific Power, that'd be folks in North Portland and other locations, take a look at your bill. I believe they've asked for a rate increase of around 12 or 13% from the Public Utility Commission. Now, there may be some give and take, but the Public Utility Commission usually gives when they ask. And, you know, maybe they'll modify it a few percentage points. But you're talking about your electric rates are going to go up once again. For PGE ratepayers, you're already paying some of the highest rates in the Pacific Northwest. The publicly owned utilities in Oregon, all of them except for two, pay lower rates than Portland General Electric. And the two that pay higher rates are rural cooperatives that have miles of electrical wire between each customer, as opposed to like here in the city where you might have thousands of customers linked to each mile of wire. And of course, the expenses are greater, and so you might expect to pay more. Well, now PGE wants more. They're not rolling back the rates. These high rates are a result of the fraudulent trading by their former parent, Enron Corporation. We're still suffering from that. And, you know, it's interesting that while the propaganda from Portland General Electric's PR firm, all the radio, TV, newspaper ads, being a co-sponsor of the Starlight Parade with Solve, their ever so faithful lapdog, they basically are saying they're new and independent. Well, if that's true, then why don't they join Snohomish People's Utility District in the state of Washington and many other utilities that sued back Enron for basically saying, hey, you bilked us out of millions of dollars in excessive rates because of the manipulation of the market, the false trading, et cetera. And they pushed back in an effort to try to ultimately save their ratepayers' money. Well, now, PGE, when it was a wholly owned subsidiary of Enron Corporation, of course, you don't want to hurt your mother. Well, now that they're independent, you don't see Portland General Electric's legal department suing Enron Corporation for something to try to, let's say, perhaps break the contracts that they're under. If the contract, the basis is illegal, can you not sue to break an illegal or fraudulently based contract and effort to renegotiate contracts? Why is that not happening? So think about that. If PGE was so truly independent and new, then why would it not be suing its former parent now that it's supposedly from under the yoke of Enron? Well, one of the reasons could be that the CEO, the chairman of the board of the new improved Portland General Electric, is Corbin McNeil Jr., who, by the way, served on the board of Enron Corporation while it owned PGE, and he's one of the biggest boosters of nuclear power in the United States. And it remains to be seen whether PGE will decide to go into nuclear power. But if they were ever to consider it, he is the man who is the most aggressive, as far as my research can tell, in terms of trying to reinvigorate the nuclear power industry on behalf of the Bush administration. Taking calls, anything on the environment, war, or the Bush administration at 231-8187. That's 231-8187. Call in, we'll patch you in. As we go on forward here, the depleted uranium news continues to trickle in. There are more cases of apparent infant mortality, increased cancer, and kidney failure, other diseases in the civilian population as well as our veteran population from both the first Persian Gulf War and our current invasion of Iraq. A misnomer is being used, so folks out there, you know, even I find myself doing it. If you call it depleted uranium, you're really adopting the language of the Bush administration in an effort to try to sell us the concept that depleted uranium isn't so bad. Now, the depleted uranium is really uranium that is just been degraded a bit, but nonetheless, it's still uranium. And so the fact that it's called depleted is supposed to make it sound better, and it's absolutely incredibly an insane way of putting a wrong label on a package. Uranium is a toxic heavy metal while also being radioactive, so it's a double whammy. It's at least two times heavier than lead, and of course you know that lead is not good for children or adults to have, and increase high blood pressure and damage your kidneys, impair the brain development of young children, decrease IQ, and then of course you have the radioactivity. So as the particles that are respirated through your lungs or ingested by mouth work their way through the body, they're irradiating the tissues as they go along, especially in lung tissue. If the small particles are lodged for years or decades, it's only a matter of time that a certain percentage of folks exposed will develop cancer or other ailments, and time will tell. But the use of depleted uranium, in my opinion, is a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions, and we are not to use weapons that cause undue harm. And it seems kind of strange when in a war that you're using weapons that kill, but they have a law of one of the laws of war is that you are not to have weapons that unnecessarily cause harm. Now, typically, we would think of things like mustard gas. Biological chemical weapons, those are directly banned, but things such as like hollow point bullets that can hit flesh and then disintegrate into many pieces, so not only trying to cause an effect but causing intentional increased damage is against the law. Now, what about depleted uranium? Then when you're done, the gift is for hundreds of thousands of years, you have a radioactive and heavy metal substance that remains in the environment of the target country. And that is something that we're going to have to deal with, similar to an issue we haven't dealt with in the Vietnam War, which is the legacy of Agent Orange. And, of course, Agent Orange with dioxin is something that stays in the system, is biopersistent. And the people of Vietnam are still suffering the effects through deformities and having massive amounts in their tissue, depending on where they are and the quantity, especially of fish, that they consume. And so we as a country are going to have to grow up and take some responsibility, first, not to use weapons like this, like the Hippocratic Oath, physician, do no harm, United States, should do no harm if there is something, a weapon that we are using that might have collateral damage effects or environmental health effects. We just, as a nation, as a policy, should not even use it. And we're not even having that discussion, let alone having the majority of Congress discuss about withdrawing from Iraq, which is something that hopefully the November elections of this year will cure by bringing in a majority of Democrats into Congress, which will allow the power of the subpoena, so we can actually have people under oath and ask him a lot of questions about many issues that are affecting us today. And that's the first step to clean house, is to have some truth. And we need a lot of it. So, folks, you can call in at 231-8187. I'll be glad to continue to ramble on, but I'd much rather hear from one of you folks. Now, if you haven't called in before, this is your opportunity to call in. It'll be quite painless. And it's 231-8187. Just give your first name or fake name, if you want, to the engineer, and he'll patch you on. The next issue I'd like to bring up here is the local metro agency is apparently preparing a green spaces bond measure for us to vote on, so we can give more of our tax dollars to green spaces. And it apparently contains a provision where a portion of the money will go to pay local parks districts. You know, if you have a city parks district, a little percentage of the money will go there in an effort to, of course, make those local jurisdictions a little more happy with the concept of a tax or taxing or bond issue being a little more politically palatable. That's a very smart from a strategic point of view, but I'll say that having seen these issues for quite a while, and I've been a personal supporter of all the green spaces bond measure that we've had before, and generally all bond measures related to parks, this one I'm going to say no to, and it's going to be for a reason that you and I may not agree on. I agree that we need more parks, and I'm generally willing to pay. But in terms of process, it seems like the professionals, the consultants, have taken over the process, in that they decided to create the bond measure, and then after they created the bond measure, decided how many tens of millions of dollars they wanted, crafted all the language, then they decided to go out to the non-governmental organizations, the nonprofits, and then say, we want your support, as opposed to going to the nonprofits. I belong to a couple of local nonprofit environmental or conservation groups. We didn't hear anything about it. They never talked to us, never approached to us, and yet they are requesting from citizens that they want more money to preserve green space, and we weren't able to say where the dollars go, how to direct the dollars, so, you know, analyze what happened with the old dollars. It was apparently quite successful with Metro having acquired more than their target amount of land by acreage, but it's somewhat skewed, and where they accumulated the land is not evenly distributed. Of course, that's just the way things are, but if we had a discussion about where the successes were and where the failures were, we could have helped craft perhaps a better bond measure. So I'm coming down against it. I've read the draft, and I'll have to read it again when it's final. And folks, now you know in advance, apparently it's going to be coming out for November. We can have further discussions on that, but I'm willing to keep an open mind. But right now, I'm saying and recommending folks no on the green spaces bond measure. That doesn't preclude one in the future. That's done in cooperation with citizens and nonprofits and environmental and conservation organizations, fishermen organizations, local neighborhoods. That I can envision being, you know, a great way of not only firming up a base of support, but also getting buy-in and cooperation. And of course, those entities can also, you know, ask and hopefully get some of the things they desire in their local parks and green spaces as well.
Scott?
Yes.
We have a couple of callers on the line.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and patch in the first caller. And what is his or her name?
That's Rainer is our first one.
Rainer, let's go ahead.
Hi,
okay,
Scott.
Thank you. Rainer, are you there?
Yes. Well, I wonder if you could...
Go ahead, Rainer.
Okay. Can you? Well, I am going ahead. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I've heard you talk about this before, and I know I should be more up on it. But what is your suggestion of the best thing that we could do in order to take PGE away from Enron and make it be a local people-owned company or government-owned company or something like that?
Well, Rainer, yeah, you do need to read up because PGE is no longer owned by Enron.
Well, okay.
So, I mean, that's a good news.
Got me there.
But the bad news is that it's the same cast of characters. The Enron chose the board, and the board, of course, is a group of folks that basically steer the ship. And so, of course, they're probably very sympathetic to their former parent.
Well, do you think an initiative would be, you know, again, to try an initiative or something? That...
Well, that can be done. And one way for folks to get involved is go to cheappower.org. That's one word, cheappower.org.
All right.
And it might be some old information there. We're going to the Oregon Public Power Coalition, which are the original sponsors of the Multnomah County People's Utility District effort in November 2003, where we got over 10,000 signatures and got 50,000 votes for less than $40,000 spent. The Oregon Public Power Coalition runs the site and we'll be putting up some new information. But go ahead and sign up for the email distribution list, and we'll keep you informed as to what's going on. And, of course, it's two-way. If you have an idea, please do email in. And one other point about the November 2003 election, recall, folks, that both PGE and PacifiCorp both spent $1.6 million each just in Multnomah County. So that's $3.2 million for one countywide measure, which is the most money ever spent in any county in any issue ever on the ballot in the state of Oregon against our $40,000, yet the public power folks got one-third the vote.
And it's so, all about advertising and propaganda, and this is the case of anything, it seems to me, that, like, it's the media, the media, and it's, there's so many problems that I feel that, you know, I know something about, and I don't feel like there's much I can do. There's one other thing I wanted to say, but I will go to that website, and I'll...
Yeah, and don't head off just yet. I got another comment. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I wanted to say one thing about depleted uranium. There's a guy in England, and his name is Chris Busby, or Busby, and he was like head of a atomic monitoring system that they have, and he discovered that depleted uranium is aerosoled, you know, so it's like one less than a micron, you know, each particle, and it's up in the air. It's like doesn't ever come down. So. It's all over Europe. It's you know, in the British Isles and everything in the air. And I read this article in the Lone Star Iconoclast. It's a Texas paper. Iconoclast kind of tells you what it is. But they were became aware of it because of the trade winds that blows it over to the Gulf Coast. And like Katrina's not enough. You know, they've got that.
You mean they encountered depleted uranium all
yes.
the way into the Gulf Coast?
Yes, and, you know, having studied physics in the 11th grade, I know from Brownian movement, you know, things travel equally eventually everywhere. So right after World War II, there was a clinic in Nagasaki where they treated people successfully for chronic radiation poisoning. You know, like if you were just half melted or something, it couldn't have done you much good, but... The way they did it was as to give people a diet of enzyme foods like miso and kimchi and kombucha. It's sort of macrobiotic approach, and at least, you know, it's something that people can do for themselves to, you know, to put out every day.
Well, it sounds like the health show, Health Watch, before my show should have a depleted uranium diet section.
They should.
Let me make a comment, and we'll get to the next caller, Rainer. Do, and folks out there that are kind enough not to be listening to Air America right now, thank you very much. You know, I will mention the other commercial folks. Go to cheappower.org and sign up, and then and ask the folks there to contact you. And we're a small enough organization; we'll call people. And you know, I'm one of the folks that are volunteering. I'm not going to give up on public power, and we'll figure out something together. It is not a done deal. Just to mention PacifiCorp, Pacific Power, its former parent, or I guess still its parent, is Scottish Power, and then it's either been just purchased or is about to be finally purchased by MidAmerica, which is owned by Berkshire Hathaway, which is owned by Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in the world.
Oh, boy. He's divesting his interests out into the
world. Sure, and what makes it more interesting, when I did research on Warren Buffett, and he's in his late 80s, I believe, he has never in his life, this billionaire, ever invested in an electric utility company.
What do you think he's doing it for?
He's doing it because he's going where the money is. And the money is coming from you and I, the ratepayers, both businesses and residents. So, folks, you think that things are going to be better now? The real thing is, in 2005, the energy bill that passed last summer is George Bush's gift to the utility industry, and one of the main ones was that they actually got rid of a law that had been around since 1935, which is the Public Utility Holding Company Act, which is the way to break up the big utility trusts in the 30s. And after, 70 years, they got rid of it. We are going back to the 1920s, which is that you can own as many electric utilities as you want, and it is not illegal.
Scott, this is the engineer.
Yes.
Hi, we only have 3 minutes and one more caller. Do you want to take that?
Yeah, let's go ahead. Rainer, thanks for calling. Okay,
hello?
Caller. Apparently, you're
going
to be our last caller. Go ahead.
Thank you.
The air.
Yeah, we were talking about collateral damage, and I was wondering about landmines and why the United States hasn't signed any treaties to get rid of them.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, that has to do with war. That has to do with the Bush administration and the waste both of humanity and our planet. And, you know, this isn't the administration that's going to get along with folks. It's not going to sign treaties in an effort to... with other folks to try to solve the world's problems. So I think my answer would be that we need to have a new Democratic Congress, hopefully the House and maybe even the Senate, this coming November. So if you know anybody in the United States, family, friends, relatives, business acquaintances, get them to vote and get them to vote Democrat. And the other thing would be we just need a change. And the other thing is that in the 2008 election, we all have to be working for a Democratic president, and it's not that I'm only for Democrats, but we really need to have the pendulum start to swing the other way. There is a complete, absolute imbalance. There was an editorial yesterday in the paper that mentioned a nasty whiff of totalitarianism is in the United States, and I think that's saying it lightly. We are really in for a world of hurt if we do not have some opposition party such as Democrats.
What kept us from signing the treaty?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What has kept us from signing the treaty?
Well, my understanding is that the president negotiates treaties, and they are ratified by Congress. If the president doesn't negotiate a treaty, then it can't be ratified by Congress. But, of course, in this rubber-stamp Congress of Republicans where they do whatever the president wants or they don't do what he doesn't want, then he'll never enter in negotiations, nor will they ratify any additional treaties. Plus, we have the the various nuclear treaties. I think he ripped up one, and he's now was going to test until recently in Nevada a bomb that was non-nuclear, but basically a nuclear type yield. This guy is completely out of control.
Scott, we have to wrap up. It's time. It's 11 o'clock.
Well, I appreciate it. Then let me say to you folks out there: remember, every day is Earth Day. I'll be on the next first Monday of the month, and you can check in on July 3rd, and maybe in between then I'll be program. It's been a pleasure to rant a little bit and to talk with a couple new folks. Remember, cheappower.org for public power, and folks, stay tuned to Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. It's a good one, and thank you for listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
And this is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. It's a little after 11, and coming up will be a Democracy Now!, as Scott said. This evening at Powell's, there will be Calvin Trillin, humorist and writer Calvin Trillin, will be at Powell's on Burnside at 7:30. And at 10 tonight, we're having a program with poets Judith Montgomery and Penelope Scambly Schott in conversation and reading with Barbara La Morticella.